Well, hi everyone. Like that movie, Inside Out, every one of us has this small staff called emotions who run the show inside of us if we let them. And if we could understand those emotions, if we got in touch with them, it would help us to understand why we fly off the handle with our kids and why we're insecure around big crowds and why we drink too much and why we try too hard to impress our friends, why we pretend we're someone we're not. Our emotions play a huge role in determining who we are. There's this great image that helps to illustrate this reality. Did you know that 90% of an iceberg is located below the water's surface? I mean, there's perfectly reasonable explanations for this from the field of physics as to why this happens. It includes Archimedes' principle and buoyancy and displacement and stuff like that that we're not going to get into today. But the iceberg is also a great metaphor for you and me and how most of us operate. I mean, a huge part of who we are exists below the surface of what people see. And that unseen part, which includes your thoughts and your feelings and your emotions, governs how you interact with the world, which means that every person you interact with has 90% of unseen stuff too. Everyone's fighting battles that you can't see. And you know, we can pretend for a while, but eventually if we're unhealthy below the surface, the way that we live our lives will be unhealthy too. And the opposite is also true. If you nurture healthy thoughts and healthy emotions below the surface with the help of God's Spirit, you will live a healthy life. And so this month we're making some healthy choices, some relationship resolutions as we head into a new year. Last week we talked about resolving to communicate better. We looked at four principles for healthy communication from Ephesians 4. And if you missed that message, you can go back and watch it online at whoisgrace.com or on your Who Is Grace app. And today, we're going to talk about resolving to foster healthy emotions. And could this be the year in both your family at home and your life group at church that you would strive for new levels of emotional health? Now, this is a new subject for me to preach about, probably new for some of you too. Partly because Christians have had kind of a strained relationship with the idea of feelings and emotions through the years. At times, emotions are demonized, and other times they're embraced. They're demonized when we say things like, I don't want that worship music to be all emotional, just give me the truth, or don't tell me what you feel, tell me what you believe. And then on the other hand, many Christians have embraced and trusted their emotions too much. They've adopted the mindset, well, if it feels good to me right now, God must want me to do it. So many Christians have fallen to one of these unhealthy extremes as it relates to our emotions, either driven by their emotions or suppressing their emotions. Both are wrong. Emotions are an important part of who we are. God created them, and He can use them in our lives. Adam had emotions before the fall, before sin. God has emotions. Christ has emotions. In and of themselves, they are not sinful. They're beneficial, even beautiful. The psalmist understood this in the classic passage describing God's utmost care in creating us, Psalm 139. Emotionality is the one aspect of our inner personality specifically referenced in this psalm. It says, "For you created me, created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb." The phrase there, inmost being, is a reference to our passions, our emotions. And so, yes, even our emotional makeup is fearfully and wonderfully made by God. In addition, our emotional health plays a critical role in our ability to grow and develop spiritually. I know plenty of people who've been diligent about church attendance and Bible reading and serving in ministry who still remain stuck in their lives. That they can't seem to navigate marital struggles and parenting difficulties. They're unable to overcome addictions or anxieties. And often the reason that they're stuck isn't because of what we would call the spiritual stuff, but because of the emotional stuff. Do you know that it's possible to be physically mature and even intellectually mature and still be stuck at age 16 emotionally? Happens all the time. 35-year-olds going out to bars and parties every weekend, desperately seeking attention and acceptance. Wives feeling the rush of insecurity every time their husband goes out of town. Voices in their head repeating, "You're not good enough." Men throwing temper tantrums when they don't get their way or when their manhood is questioned, like they used to when they were 5. Grandmothers pouting when their 3-year-old grandchild says, "I hate you, Grandma, because you didn't give them the candy." And so you give them the silent treatment because you're so hurt. Your feelings are so hurt by a 3-year-old. We've got to learn how to be grown-ups emotionally. Our emotional health affects our whole lives, including our spiritual lives, which leads us to today's big idea. It's impossible to be spiritually mature while you remain emotionally immature. Ooh, that's a mouthful. Ponder that for a second. Consider what you think of that statement. It's impossible to be spiritually mature while you remain emotionally immature. You see, the Bible takes a very holistic approach when it comes to our faith. Every part of you needs to be engaged. And we've accepted a splintered view of what it means to be a human being. You think, well, I can have intellectual identity over here and relational identity over here and an emotional identity here and a sexual identity here, a political identity and a spiritual identity, and they can all operate independently of each other. But when we live like this, we lose something very important. We lose our integrity. Do you know what it means to have integrity? It just comes from the word integrated. It means our lives are integrated and not separated. We don't have all these different identities. We have one identity that operates holistically under the lordship of Christ. And so I want us to look at a text today that's going to be our jumping off point. We'll use a bunch of other scriptures as we go, but consider Jesus' words today from Mark 12:30. He says this, "Love the Lord with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength." Now, in this text, Jesus is responding to a question from one of the religious leaders who asks, what's the most important commandment? I mean, he says, Jesus, if you were to boil all the scriptures down for us into one sentence, what would it be? And Jesus responds by quoting the Shema, the ancient Jewish prayer from Deuteronomy 6:5. And this prayer from the Torah has been the centerpiece of Jewish morning and evening devotions for thousands of years now. It begins with the short phrase, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one." Now, when you think about that phrase in light of what we just talked about, it points to the unity of God, all of his personhood, all of his identity, all of his faculties unified. He is one. He is working together as one. And it's followed then by a call for us in the same way to use all our personhood, all of our identities, all of our faculties unified and working toward love and devotion to God. Every inch of our lives must be sold out to God, including our emotions, heart and soul and mind and strength. When you look at these four areas of our personhood, it seems that Jesus is familiar with the iceberg illustration I used earlier. Notice that three of the four areas are internal. They're below the surface. Love God with your heart. The heart is just the center, the seat of your emotions and your will. It's the control center of your life. Love God with your soul, or psuche, which is where we get our English word psyche. It's your personality, that part of you that lets you live in color instead of black and white. And then love the Lord with your mind, with your thought life. Paul would say later, to be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And finally comes the part that we usually concentrate the most on, your strength, the dunamis. It's where we get our word dynamite. Love God with the stuff that you do on the outside. But as we said earlier, the outside stuff, your strength, is governed by the inside, heart, soul, and mind. And we can only love God externally if we're loving him internally as well. And so my question today is, are you loving God with your emotions? Have you resolved to pursue maturity in this area? Because as our big idea states, it's impossible to be spiritually mature while you remain emotionally immature. And the Bible issues a clear call toward maturity. The New Testament says things like, you ready? When I was a child, I thought like a child, but put away childish things. We speak a message of wisdom, says 1 Corinthians 2, among those who are mature. We will no longer be infants, says Paul, tossed back and forth by the waves in Ephesians 4. Instead, he says, speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into him who is the head, that is Christ. And so can we agree this morning that it's time for us to grow up into Christ and love God with all of ourselves, including our emotions? And some of you are here today and you've allowed yourself to be governed by your emotions and you haven't grown up. You have anger issues that are out of control. The people around you know it. You maybe know it, but you don't know what to do about it. Some of you are insecure to the point that it's crippling in all of your interactions. Some of you carry guilt like a weight around your neck. Something happened in your past that you blame yourself for, and you just can't seem to let go of it. There are others of you who are just walking in pervasive sadness, maybe full-blown depression, or maybe just a constant heaviness of soul. These are just runaway emotions. And from an early age, we've learned some unhealthy ways to deal with runaway emotions like this. You can see, if you look in your sermon notes, there's a chart there. And this is the left column of that chart. And the first rule that we learn that's unhealthy is just to stuff our emotions. So little Johnny's dog dies when he's 6 years old. That dog was his constant companion, his best friend. And now the dog's gone. Johnny's a basket case. His parents are caught off guard, and so they just say things like, "Don't cry, Johnny, stop crying. There's no need to be upset." What are they saying? Stuff your emotions. Don't let it out. And they'll usually go on by saying, "Well, we'll get a new dog next week," or "let's go get some ice cream." And the subtle second rule, that this unhealthy rule that they reinforce, is that we should fill the void with distractions. And so as kids, we might fill that emotional void with a new pet or ice cream, but as adults, the distractions become much more serious. A new substance, a new affair, a new debt, just to fill the void. Later, as a teenager, Johnny gets dumped by his girlfriend in a humiliating way at school, and he feels his eyes welling up with tears at his desk, but he begins to feel the attention of the room turning his way, and so he shuts down again, like he learned to do. And so he after class, goes to a friend in the hallway to talk about it, but his friend says, "Hey, come on, man, just get over it. You're embarrassing me." And Johnny learns the third unhealthy rule of runaway emotions, and that is to isolate. People can't be trusted. It'll do too much damage to my image, to my reputation, if people really know how I'm feeling. And so I guess I'll feel things alone. Later that night, he finally breaks down and tells his parents about the breakup, only to have them say, "Oh, don't worry, there's other fish in the sea. You'll feel better soon." Here's the phrase, "Just give it time." Which is where he learned the fourth unhealthy rule, that time heals all wounds. And these unhealthy rules for dealing with runaway emotions are, in an unspoken way, almost universally accepted. Here's the thing. None of them are true. And it's led to a bunch of people walking around in 30 and 50 and 80-year-old bodies, but on the inside they're stuck at 12 because they believed these lies. And it's led to a lot of pretending, a lot of faking, a lot of people walking around with masks. Reminds me of a story. There was a guy desperate for a job, and so he reads one day that there's a job available at the zoo, and so he goes to the zoo to apply. And the woman doing the interviews tells him, "Well, we only have one position here that's open, and here's what it is. I mean, last week our gorilla died, and we don't have the funds to replace the gorilla with a real, authentic one, and so we're going to pay you to put on a gorilla suit and to get in the cage and pretend to be a gorilla." So the guy's kind of offended by this because his mother didn't raise him to be a gorilla, but he was desperate for work. And so he put on the gorilla suit, he goes into the cage, and at first he wasn't too excited about his job, but the more he was in there, the more he started kind of getting into it, you know, and soon the crowds were quite convinced by his behavior that this was a real gorilla. And so one day he's really into it, and he's swinging from the vines from side to side so enthusiastically that he swings right over the top of the wall from his cage into the next cage, which is where they kept the lion. And in an instant, the lion was upon him, and he could feel the hot breath of the lion on his face, and he forgot everything. And the whole hoax went out the window, and in his desperation and panic, he just started screaming, help me, get me out of here, and surprised the onlookers to hear a gorilla screaming such things. But only a second later, he heard a very human-sounding voice coming from the lion that said, "Shut up, you idiot, or we'll both get fired." Okay? Not an authentic animal in the whole zoo, right? And we live in this world where hiding, where living behind masks is like standard operating procedure. It's the way most people deal with runaway emotions. Sorry about that. So I just want to talk about what the Bible has to say about some of these emotions. And then I want us to get some practical next steps on giving our emotions their proper place and growing toward health. Okay, here we go. So how can we love God with our emotions, especially the ones that are immature or out of control? I want to talk about four of these runaway emotions. And listen, I'm not a therapist here, and so just listening to this sermon in no way replaces talking with a counselor or going to a support group. Can we just be clear on that at the beginning? And as we go through these emotions, I think it's important to not give them too much importance. In other words, we shouldn't be governed by them, and on the other hand, we shouldn't ignore them either. It's helpful to think about our emotions as alarm bells, like a smoke alarm as it goes off. It's a warning for you to take notice of something, that there may be a fire that you need to attend to. Okay? So these are warning bells. The first runaway emotion is anger. Last week, we looked at the passage that said, "Be angry, but don't sin." And so there's such a thing as righteous anger. But most often, ours is an unrighteous anger. And to this, Solomon says in Proverbs 16:32, "Whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." Now, he's insinuating that it's harder to rule your emotions than to rule a whole city. Okay, this is real talk. Do you have an issue with anger? I mean, let me just throw out a couple of diagnostic questions. Do minor irritations cause you to lose your cool? Like you're out for dinner and you spill your food. You're at your computer, you're about to hit save and the hard drive crashes. Do you just lose it? Do you tend to be in conflict often? Do you always seem to be in some kind of dispute or fight with this person or that? Do you blame others for your outbursts? She made me angry. He said such and such to me, and it just pushed my buttons. It's his fault I lost my temper. Do you have trouble submitting to authority? Do you lose it in traffic? Do you think that anyone driving slower than you is an idiot and anyone going faster than you is a maniac? Okay, that's George Carlin. Then maybe you have some runaway anger in your life. And anger has a way of hijacking our lives. Of all of our emotions, anger has the way of taking control. And suddenly we're doing things that later, when we're more calm, we look back on and we regret. So what is anger? When you really stop and think about it, most of our anger finds its roots in our desire to somehow control the people and the environment around us. In other words, we want things to go the way we want them to go. And if they don't go my way, I'm going to lose it. And so if we're consumed by anger, we will never grow spiritually into the men and women that God created us to be. So when the anger alarm goes off, we must pay attention. The second runaway emotion is insecurity. Some of you struggle with paralyzing insecurity. And it not only affects you, but it affects your family, it affects your friends. And listen, I'm normally a pretty confident person, but I remember when I first took over as lead pastor back in 2010. Pastor Al had been here for 32 years before me. He was the consummate professional, beloved shepherd, caregiver of this church. And then it was my turn, the young punk, the guy that used to be the youth pastor. And the transition was great and healthy and everything went smooth, but in that first year, man, there was some struggles, people issues. Our finances started to struggle, and the voices started in on me. You don't belong in this role. You can't do this. This is never going to work. You're going to fail. Who do you think you are anyway? Why did you ever think you were qualified for this? You're not spiritual enough. You're not compassionate enough. You're not experienced enough. Questioning, doubting, wondering. It's insecurity, and it's a warning bell. Something needs attention. An area of my life needs an intervention. Listen to the psalmist in Psalm 22, 6 and 7. "But I am a worm and not a man, scorned by mankind and despised by the people. All who see me mock me. They make mouths at me," or faces. "They wag their heads." Now, that's insecurity. And it expresses itself sometimes through isolation. But in social settings, insecurity often results in bragging about yourself, making yourself the hero of every story, always turning the attention back to you, even when someone else is talking. It can also express itself in addictions to food or alcohol, to substances, something where you can have a little control when everything else seems so out of control. And so if you're consumed by insecurity, you'll never grow spiritually. The third runaway emotion is guilt. Guilt is a painful and devastating emotion because it bites at your conscience with unrelenting tenacity. Living with guilt is like being haunted by an evil ghost who constantly reminds you of your past sins. Is unresolved guilt eating away at your soul? Is your conscience killing you over something that you did or failed to do, perhaps even years ago? Maybe some sexual sin in your past has never come to light, or maybe you committed a crime or had an abortion. Maybe you lied about someone, causing that person tremendous difficulty or heartache. Whatever the case, is there some condemning emotion that keeps pointing at you and saying, "Guilty"? Psalm 38:4, the psalmist says, "My guilt has overwhelmed me like a burden too heavy to bear." And so how does guilt express itself? Well, sometimes guilt causes us to be overly protective, overly controlling of our circumstances, even of our kids. It sometimes causes us to scramble around in an exhausting pursuit to try to act spiritual or to do enough good deeds to try to overcome the demons of our past. Sometimes we rationalize or blame our guilt on other people. It was my wife's fault, or it was my parents' fault. Well, if you only knew what I had to put up with, you would have done this too. Sometimes people with unresolved guilt just go into hiding. They stuff it down deep inside. If you're consumed by guilt, you'll find yourself stuck spiritually. The fourth runaway emotion is sadness. Listen to Psalm 38, 6 through 8. I am bowed down and brought very low. All day long I go about mourning. My back is filled with searing pain. There is no health in my body. I'm feeble and utterly crushed. I groan in anguish of heart. Some of you deal with constant feelings of sadness and discouragement that can cause negative circumstances to overwhelm and even debilitate your life. In the book Lectures to My Students, the great pastor and evangelist Charles Spurgeon wrote these words. Fits of depression come over most of us. Usually cheerful as we may be, we must at intervals be cast down. The strong are not always vigorous, the wise are not always ready, the brave are not always courageous, and the joyous are not always happy. There may be here and there men of iron, but surely the rust frets even these. Periods of intense sadness can bring warning signs like sudden weight loss or gain, too much or too little sleep, a loss of interest in hobbies and things that you used to enjoy, fatigue, difficulty, concentrating or making decisions, irritability. And like the other emotions, sadness is a warning bell. It's a smoke alarm that's signaling to you that something's on fire. And you won't be able to make progress spiritually if you're overcome with sadness. And so what do we do with these runaway emotions? How do we love God with heart and soul and mind and strength? How do we love Him with this inside stuff? I want to remind you that feelings are a gift from God. They are not bad. They are not evil. They serve a godly purpose. And they can be the source of tremendous healing and spiritual growth if they find their proper place. And there's an interesting passage in the Old Testament. It's a conversation between God and Cain. Remember Cain and Abel? And Cain is feeling jealous because Abel's offering was more acceptable to God because he'd followed God's laws. And so God comes to Cain as a loving father, and he has this conversation about his emotions. And he essentially says, it's not bad to have these emotions. You just need to put them in their proper place. And eventually Cain would disobey him and kill his brother. But we can still learn from God's initial conversation with Cain about his emotions. This is in Genesis 4, 5 through 7. Cain was very angry and his face was downcast. And then the Lord said to Cain, why are you so angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it. And so God Himself comes to Cain and says, listen, you are raw with emotion. I can see it on your face. And one of two things is going to happen with your anger. Either you're going to rule over it, or it's going to rule over you. In and of itself, these emotions, this emotion isn't bad. And God's even alluding to that here. But if they go off the rails, sin is crouching just around the corner, ready to pounce on these runaway emotions. And so I want to look at how this passage contradicts the unhealthy ways of dealing with runaway emotions. And it provides us with a healthy response. In your sermon notes, you'll see two columns comparing these two approaches. This is the second column. And so earlier we said that the unhealthy approach was to stuff your emotions. Instead, the healthy approach is to identify your emotions. Look at the Lord's first question to Cain. He says, why are you angry? God says, what's that about? Do the work of figuring out the source of that emotion. Otherwise, it's going to get the very best of you. This is an important principle that's going to help many of us. We need to see our emotions as consultants and not CEOs in our lives. Don't be ruled by them, but let them help you. The only way to achieve that is to first identify what your emotions are. And this can only happen by making some time for self-reflection and submission to the Spirit of God. Often for me, this happens in my chair when we say, find your chair. What am I feeling? But then you have to ask, why? Why did that make me so angry? Why did I become so insecure? Why did that trigger my guilt? Why did that spiral me into sadness? God says to Cain and to us, figure out why you're having that emotion. Next, the unhealthy approach would suggest that we fill that void with distractions. Remember the ice cream or puppies. The healthy response would say, immerse yourself in the truth. God reminds Cain, if you don't do what is right, sin will be right there, ready to run its course. And our emotions have a say, but they don't have the final say. We must immerse ourselves in the truth. We have to think our way into right feelings, not feel our way into right thinking. Because feelings change, emotions change, but the truth doesn't change. And so anger gets redirected with the truth. If you're walking around trying to control everything or everyone else and you're flying off the handle, you need to immerse yourself in the truth that you're actually not in control of anything. God is in control. And until we internalize that truth, we will never overcome our anger. Guilt and sadness and insecurity and fear and shame and regret, they're all redirected by the truth. And so we need a steady reminder of the truth. We need a steady reminder of the scriptures that say there's no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. That Hebrews 8 says, Christ will blot out your transgressions and remember your sins no more. We need to be reminded that John 15:9, you are loved by God as certainly as Jesus is loved by God. We need to be reminded, 1 Corinthians 6:19-20, that you've been bought with a price. You belong to God. Ephesians 1:5, you've been adopted as God's child. Colossians 2:10, that you are complete in Christ. You need to preach the truth to yourself as often as necessary. Because as much as our enemy, the liar, would like to convince you that you're defeated, that you're no good, that you're nothing more than the sins of your past, Jesus comes and he says, you are who I say you are. Preach the truth to yourself. The next unhealthy approach would suggest that you isolate with your emotions. But a healthier way is to stay connected. It's interesting that when God approaches Cain in his anger, the first thing that God does is just hold up a mirror to him. He says, man, maybe you can't see this anger, your emotion, but I can see it in your face, and I'm going to reflect this back to you right now. You see, we tend to withdraw from relationships when we're wrestling with emotions. Even Jesus stayed connected when he was hurting. In the Garden of Gethsemane, during one of the darkest, most emotional moments in his life, he asked for support from his friends. Look what he said in Matthew 26. He said, my soul's overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. Jesus said, I need some brothers around me right now, so pray with me, stand with me, hold me up, guys. And guess what? You need that too. This is one of the reasons that life groups are so valuable. They keep us connected. It's why ministries like Celebrate Recovery are so critical. You know, people hear that word recovery and they think, well, maybe that thing on Monday nights is just for drug addicts or alcoholics or whatever. Yes, it is for all of that. But Monday nights at CR are for anyone with hurts or habits or hangups of any kind, because we need each other. And some of you have some emotional stuff that goes just a little deeper, probably beyond what a life group or a recovery group could help you with. And we have a partnership here at Grace with an amazing organization called CCA, Christian Counseling Associates. There are trained therapists at, very soon, all of our locations. And you can get more information on all of these things at whoisgrace.com/get help. But here's the bottom line. We need other people if we're going to get mature emotionally. We will always fool ourselves into thinking that we're right, that we're the emotional true north, and that everyone else is crazy. And we need people around us who will hold up a mirror and say, hey, this is what I see. Finally, the unhealthy mantra is that time heals all wounds. But that's not true. No, only the Holy Spirit will heal your wounds. 50 years ago, industrialists thought that they could just bury toxic waste and that it would just go away, that time would take care of it all. Well, we've since learned that it doesn't just go away. It makes trouble. It leaks into the water table. It contaminates crops. It kills animals. And buried emotions do the same thing. They don't just go away. Time doesn't heal a thing. Buried pain leaks into our emotional systems. It wreaks havoc there. It distorts our perceptions of life. It taints our relationships. Many times people don't know what's making their world so cloudy and why there's a river of guilt or sadness underneath it. But it's because they've buried something and thought that time would heal it all. But only God has the power to heal. And that doesn't mean that you're not going to carry some scars with you, but you will be able to move forward when the Holy Spirit begins his healing work. Your emotions can start working properly again. Your perceptions and relationships can get cleared up with the help of the Spirit of God. And so what would it look like for you to get serious about your emotional health this year? Do you know what an impact that it would make on your spiritual growth? Do you understand the implications in your family if you would just say, you know what, I'm tired of this anger mastering me. I'm going to reestablish control of my emotions. Or saying, you know what? I've punished my husband long enough with this lingering insecurity. This is the year I'm going to get healthy. I've carried this guilt or this shame or this addiction long enough. It's time to get healthy. And so here's what I want you to do. Would you take this next step? Today, will you identify a runaway emotion in your life that needs to get healthy? If you don't know what it is, ask your spouse. They'll tell you. They know. Trust me. Okay? You identify that runaway emotion and then resolve to get spiritually and emotionally healthy. Make a resolution that just says, you know what, this is the year. And at the bottom of your notes today, I would ask you just to seal up this declaration. Would you fill in the blank there on your notes, just by way of putting it in writing, and say, this year I resolve to get healthy by mastering my, and then fill in the blank as to what that emotion is. Take a moment and do that right now. God bless you.